This is EdUp Legal with your host, Deborah Solmore. She's an experienced higher education lawyer, most recently the general counsel for a system of nonprofit institutions, and she's going to be leading conversations about trending legal, regulatory, and compliance matters in higher education, with a focus on leaving out the legalese and making legal easy. Let's hear from your host, Deborah Solmore.
Welcome to another episode of EdUp Legal. Today, I'm excited to have as my guest, Randy Frisch, the president of City University at Seattle, and also the former general counsel and vice chancellor for business and administration with National University. So welcome, Randy. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Deborah. Good to be here.
So today, what I really want to focus on is something that I think is a big issue in both of our hearts and something that we both have a lot of experience in, which is talking about alternative models in higher education. The news on sort of the challenges of higher ed doesn't seem to be getting any better. We're living in a world where demand is down. We have rising prices continue at schools. Viable alternatives, people questioning the value proposition of education, student loans. I could go on with a very, very long list. And so I think the challenges are still there. And what I want to talk to you about today is how institutions that are struggling with some of these challenges can be thinking outside of the box about alternatives and options available to their institutions. Does that sound good?
Yeah, it does. It is a very challenging environment challenging more so for smaller institutions. I agree.
So I think that when I sort of focus on this issue, I think about a lot of the small nonprofit private institutions that are struggling to figure out how to stay financially sustainable, how to grow their enrollment, and I think how to differentiate themselves. And I know that you and I both have a lot of experience in a system or an affiliate model. And I find that this is something I think I have a lot of passion about. I find that those models aren't necessarily top of mind in the conversations when small institutions start looking at what their options are. Would you agree with that?
I do. I think it's an option that maybe has been overlooked by the popular press because it's not as sexy. It isn't always as dire in terms of layoffs and drama that can be associated with an acquisition or a closure. And those tend to get bigger headlines.
I think there's definitely an interest in it. I know we reconnected in person last summer at the NACUA conference, where I spoke on a panel with some great people about this sort of idea of thinking outside the box. We talked about the TCS system, and we talked about what was going on at UMass Global. And we had a packed room, so I think there were a lot of people who were interested in the topic.
Yeah, I think there are... In particular, and really my comments are about the nonprofit arena, where the opportunity to have thinking outside of the box in some ways is expanded because it's about the mission. In the for-profit world, it would be about a return and optimizing for shareholders. Right. And in the nonprofit world, we're interested in maximizing for students.
I would agree with that. One of the news articles that I read that sort of prompted me to want to put on an episode about this was a recent article about some nonprofit private schools in Pennsylvania that were looking to form a shared services consortia. And, I put out the caveat that what I know about it is from what I've read, haven't spoken to anybody or the consultants that they were working with. But I was excited to learn that they were exploring this opportunity, and maybe a little saddened to read on that it didn't seem like it was going to really go anywhere. And the article in Inside Higher Ed talked about some of those challenges, which is what really wanted me to get on, use my podcast platform to get on and sort of talk about, well, wait a second, let's talk about what is this consortia idea, and why is it a good model that people should be considering?
Yeah, I thought the story was really helpful in understanding how complicated a merger, an affiliation, a consortium can be, and it needs time to bake. So I'm not sure that there isn't something to be pieced together in Pennsylvania. I wish them all the best. It's a very emotional and sometimes difficult process for the people involved. You know, at national university system, using that as our affiliation agreement nomenclature, we're fortunate. We've got a terrific leader in Dr. Mark Milliron, and he and I were talking about the reason for affiliation, at least in our arena, and we agree. You know, it's mission driven. It's about the mission. It is about providing students with the best possible experience that we can. And if you keep that in the forefront, then and the other important pieces like leadership alignment, trustee support, and good communication can be developed underneath it.
I think when people are looking at sort of a system or an affiliation model, I think I'll go off on a tangent for a second and say that I always struggled with the word affiliation because it doesn't have a concrete definition. So when you come to an institution and you say, well, we're thinking about a merger, people sort of understand. We're thinking of being acquired or selling ourselves. I get it. We're thinking of closing. Everyone knows what that means. But then you sort of use this term, a system model or an affiliation. And I find that people scratch their head and say, well, what does that mean? I can't look up in a dictionary and understand what does it mean if I quote unquote affiliate. Within national, do you find that when you're talking to potential new partners that becomes a topic of discussion?
It does. I think the popular press really understands what a merger is, what an acquisition is, and those tend to grab the headlines. So that's that for-profit world where it's pretty clear what happens in the general population. In an affiliation, I've tended to look at it as the legal process by which nonprofits work together in some fashion. You know, it can even be a bit of a challenge for the education department as it kind of struggles to understand what these agreements, these affiliation agreements actually mean in practice. You know, Ed is really wants to know who's in charge. And with an affiliation, there's some amount of shared control that allows an institution allows all the institutions to serve their students, fulfill their mission, and do it in a way where if one other affiliate can help perform that service better, then the affiliates can help each other.
I think that point is very well taken. Having engaged in these conversations with not only the Department of Education over the last 5 years, but also some of the accreditors and some of the state licensing authorities, I think clarifying your message and making sure that your message about what it is that you are and what it is that you aren't is very important. And I think you're right. I think sometimes they struggle with because it doesn't fit in any one of their particular boxes. So I think that's a good point. While we're on sort of that point, what are your thoughts about the way in which maybe the department and now some of the accreditors, I know Middle States has a policy out now for comment on third-party service arrangements, how that's impacting or could impact the ability to grow system models? Because there seems to be a much higher scrutiny on certain types of third-party service providers.
Yeah, I think this is a a fascinating evolution of delivering excellent student experiences, and third party OPMs, if you will, online program managers have opened the eyes of many an administrator to how to be more efficient in developing and putting together programs. It's similar to the issue with it is, does the profit that the OPM earns while they're helping an institution put on these programs, does that help the student? And I think the education departments look at OPMs is appropriate. And there have been some institutions that are offering programs they would not have been able to without an OPM. The question now becomes, have our eyes been opened in the nonprofit or public sector that that we can fill those services just as well?
So kind of going back to maybe where we started, which was trying to put this idea of these consortia or system models on people's radar screen. You know, one of the things I think is the most important, and I would love to get your take on it, is that all of these struggling smaller institutions are trying, and I think their board is trying very hard to preserve their mission, to preserve their identity, to preserve their brand. And I think sometimes what gets overlooked is that a system model or an affiliation model, first and foremost, can do that, because you're not being absorbed by the system, or you're really going to maintain sort of some independence in terms of your mission, your brand, your school. So I why do you think that is that sort of gets overlooked whenever these conversations happen?
I think there is probably a couple of reasons. Number one, an institution that doesn't have either some amount of market share or some amount of market segment that it can operate in a way that is sustainable, they aren't attractive candidates for affiliation. If you think about an affiliation, it's a couple of nonprofit leaders coming together to see if their missions are aligned, if their leadership is aligned, if they are very student focused, and so it hasn't gotten as much attention as affiliations have not gotten as much attention as I think they deserve, because sometimes the institution isn't able to fulfill its mission in a way that's sustainable, and there would be few other institutions who would want to take that on. So it could be that what we read in the popular press is more about institutions that are too far gone or don't have that defendable differentiation to make operating part of the institution or a smaller institution sustainable.
Interesting. You said that you thought there were a few reasons. Other thoughts about why that might be?
Yeah, I think that it is also a challenge for a president to take the passenger seat, and sometimes that's what needs to happen, and that is another reason that affiliations get overlooked, and maybe I'd throw one final one in, and that's trustees are beautiful, amazing, generous people, and they want to do the best they can for their institution, and that gets interpreted as defending the name and kind of the mission, and sometimes taking a little bit of a back seat or giving up a position as a trustee, and those are some Those would be three of the reasons I think it gets overlooked.
Yeah, I think those are great reasons. And I am sure you probably would agree, but I know those are things that in my practice, I saw all of those. And I think from the trustee standpoint, I agree. You have a group of people whose, you know, heart and soul are into the mission of the institution where they sit on the board. But I think sometimes it's, you know, fear. I used to say that one of the things that you really needed most of to consider this system model is courage and bravery, right? So courage and bravery to think outside the box and to sort of ask the questions that need to be asked to see if this is something that might resonate with you. So I hope if anybody who's involved in the Pennsylvania potential consortium is listening, that maybe they'll go back to the table and sort of say, okay, you know, how can we make this work? There are clearly a lot of successful consortia out there that is dedicated to, I guess, course sharing or program sharing. But I think what National does is more expansive, right? It's really about sort of how do we leverage services? How do we leverage economies of scale? And how do we make small institutions able to survive with a safety net under them?
Yeah, one of the things that is really helpful in our affiliation relationship is it has to be a win-win-win. If there is a service that National could provide, but it's more sophisticated than City University needs, then City University will provide it on its own. Usually, the smaller institution in these consortia, not unlike a corporate setting where there's some corporate overhead charge, sometimes the smaller institution would do it in a less sophisticated, more guerrilla approach, if guerrilla warfare approach, if you will. And so those services don't apply. And our trustees have been very supportive. If it's something that the smaller institution wouldn't help it and help its students, then we don't have to avail ourselves to it.
That's great. So I guess the sort of last question I would ask in sort of closing, and we talked a little bit about this before I hit record, which is if you are an institution, you're a president, you're a senior leader, you're a trustee, and you want to sort of think about, and you're trying to think about doing something transformational, doing something strategic, and you want to take a look at sort of a system model, what would you give as sort of guidance about where to start to ensure that you actually give it a fulsome look, ask the right questions, you know, understand the challenges? So I'll just open the floor and say holistically, you know, how would you advise somebody to sort of start that process and go about doing that?
Yeah, I think it's an important strategic option for any institution that's contemplating how to be sustainable moving forward. To evaluate an affiliation, a consortium. And I would suggest it starts with your mission. You know, is there mission alignment with another institution? And is that mission designed to do the best possible job for students? So I think that would be number one on the checklist is mission. And number two on the checklist is leadership alignment. And, you know, that starts at the president's level, but it's definitely important throughout the president's cabinet or leadership team, however it's described. Third is probably, candid conversation with trustees about what could work and how they feel about it. And the final piece, which I... It sounds almost like a tritism, but is really, really important, and that's communication. And communicating to when you can with the entire team how this is going to be a win-win-win. I don't think promising jobs is realistic or transparent. But I do think that if you're confident this is mission aligned and it's going to be a great result for students, that's why most of us get into nonprofit higher education. And I think that would that's a winning piece of any communication that would go on. You know, we've done quite a few affiliations over the years at National, and kind of those are the tick marks: mission alignment, leadership alignment, trustee alignment, and communicating more than you think necessary.
That's funny that that's the way you ended that, because I was going to say, I don't believe that's a tritism. I believe that that is extremely important. And I think over communication or starting communication early, because I think when you're talking about something sort of so strategic and transformational, you would tend to sort of keep it in a need to know basis. And by the time you've turned to, oh, what should my communication plan be? You're either too late, or people already have formed opinions, or people know things that you think that they don't know. And so I think trying to get everyone in the institution aligned for its, you know, its financial survivability, its ability to grow programs, and to just be doing the kinds of things you want to do. I think that I don't know that I could put it above president, leadership, trustees, but I think it's on equal par.
Yeah. President Milliron and I were talking last week about, he does a fantastic job of over communicating, does town halls, puts out letters, memos, talks to everyone. And we were accepting the reality that he still gets questions about why we're doing X or Y. And, you know, people have busy lives. And yeah. While we are a very important part of them, they have busy lives, and it takes 7 or 8 times of explaining something to each person for it to really resonate and feel like they've been communicated. So I agree with you. It's on par.
And I think, you know, I'll end by going back to something we said at the beginning, which is, you know, what's most important for all of these institutions are, as you said, your students. And to those trustees or to the leadership that thinks preserving the brand name or preserving the culture, yes, but maybe one step above that is what's best for your students, because those are the ones that you want to keep coming back. I think this I was going to dovetail into something else, but I think it could be its own podcast, which is the idea that at the end of the day, higher education institutions are businesses. You are running a business, and you're, I hate to say it because higher ed leaders don't like this terminology, but your product are your students. And so I think trying to think more broadly about, you know, you're in charge of a large business. And I think that when you think about it that way, some of these M&A concepts might make more sense to people. I know that's just my two cents.
No, I agree. And, you know, you can always find ways to maintain a name, really proud of the work done at National, maintaining the John F. Kennedy University name in the John F. Kennedy School of Psychology. And there are other ways that creative trustees like we have at National, terrific trustees, can make it a win-win-win.
Well, thank you for taking the time to come and chat with me. I think I mentioned to you that I am about to transition into a new role that will take me outside of the higher ed space. I hope to maintain the podcast because I love doing this. But my public service announcement before I start that role is to really say that, you know, I am very passionate about the idea that we need to keep the smaller nonprofit private institutions on survival mode. And this is just one of those areas that I think they should be looking at. So thank you for sharing your time and your expertise. And I wish you and CityU and National continued success.
Deborah, thank you. Wish you success. And please don't forget about us. Always need great people like you helping higher ed get better.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.